really believe when the family of God comes together, when the church comes together on a Sunday, one of the primary things we should be doing is ministering to one another and ministering to one another in prayer. So a lot of times when we've been, in the midst of a worship service and I'm teaching and it comes to response time and we're worshiping, at times they'll call for, you know, people to stand and receive prayer from individuals around them. Other times it's more corporate response that we're responding together. All of us equally are, you know, subject to what God is revealing to us through the scriptures. But in those times, there hasn't been an opportunity for you to just, you know, receive prayer for things that are going on in your personal life, things that are going on throughout the week. Not every single message I preach is going to be targeting exactly what you're going through in your life at any given point in time. And so we want to have avenues for you guys to just receive prayer, to receive ministry, to speak to somebody about what's going on in your life, despite whatever I may be speaking about, or despite the fact that there may not be a specific time where I'm calling for people to receive prayer. So every single time that I conclude on a message and we do enter into a time of response worship, I am going to invite any of you at any point to go to any one of the four crosses in the room, and there are going to be people there that are ready to receive you, to pray for you, to hear what's going on in your life, to take down any needs that you have, if there are needs that you want to express to the leadership of the church. And then we will follow up with you on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and see how things are going, to provide additional support if that's needed. But these individuals at the crosses, they aren't people who just said, hey, I want to pray for people and find out, you know, stuff about their lives. We hand-selected the folks. They're going to be a part of this team. So they've displayed spiritual maturity and commitment to this family over a long period of time. They're in relationship with us as a leadership team. So you can trust that when you go to the crosses, you're going to receive ministry and prayer from someone who's been walking with Jesus and who can effectively pray on your behalf and whatever's going on in your life. They're also going to be available after services. So I'll say for a portion of like 5 minutes after service is concluded, you know, if the ministry team could come up to the front. They're just going to be standing up here waiting for you if you need prayer. Again, related to the message and something that's revealed throughout our time together, or just something else the Lord is laying on your heart. It could be you have a big job interview. It could be you've gotten a terrible prognosis from the doctor. It could be anything that's going on in your marriage or parenting, anything in your life at all. We want to pray for you, and we believe that's a major component of us being the family of God. Don't you agree? Yes. So, you know, I realize that this is going to be one of those things that it might take like 6 months, 9 months, a year before this is really a part of our culture, where every single Sunday, you know, we all feel comfortable of sharing with each other what's going on, being transparent, really seeking out the help that we need. I'm really hoping that in a year's time, some of you would actually come to church, not just because you want to worship or you want to hear the teaching of the scriptures. Maybe the primary reason you want to show up and be a part of this gathering on Sunday is because you need prayer and you want someone to stand in the gap with you in whatever it is you're facing in your life. I would love if we were just known for that, that this is a place you're going to be ministered to, and not just sit in some seat and listen to some guy talk on a stage, but you're really engaging each other in what's going on in your lives. So that's the ministry care team. Again, when I finish this sermon and we enter into a time of worship, they're going to be available at the crosses if you need prayer for any reason, and I would encourage you to take them up on that. But I am going to step into this message here. You can raise your hand if you want a Bible. We've got brand new Bibles that actually have larger print. So I'm guessing that we're going to run out of these today because you're going to replace all the Bibles that you guys had with the smaller print and add these to your bookshelves. Man, you guys ever feel like you can't think, like your mind is just a mess because of like the state of your house? Like your house is messy, your room is messy, so you just can't think and you have to clean your room and then you can finally like relax. I don't know, is that an OCD characteristic? Am I admitting that that's what I have? Well, I'm like that. If the house is a mess, which happens every single day with the four kids, or if my room's a mess, I just have a hard time thinking. And you know, personally, I'm in the middle of a move. We're moving homes. We're leaving our home in North Huntington. We're moving to Southeast. We're moving to Silverado Canyon. No, we're moving to Southeast Huntington, and it's like my room has exploded all over Huntington. I have things in all these different homes of different people in the church. God bless all of you for your gracious service to me as a friend. But I can tell you, okay, it's on another level. My mind is just not there because everything is a mess in my life personally. So please have grace for me as we step through this morning. I'm just giving you fair warning that that's where I'm at. But we're going to open up to Exodus chapter 35. Turn there with me, if you will. We're going to read from 35 to chapter 40, finishing out this series. Now, I'll read some excerpts. We won't go word for word. But last week was great to hear about Moses' unique relationship with God, forged over the entirety of the book of Exodus. We got to see the result of this, personal transformation that went on in his life, to the point where he shared this intimacy with God and could advocate on behalf of the people of God despite their sin. And Moses advocated for the people. He appealed to the character of God that had been on display throughout the entire book. And he asked that God would go with them and lead them as they were headed toward the promised land, because the threat was that God's presence was going to depart from the people because of the sin of the golden calf. As a result of that whole teaching, Brian Sumner reminded us last week that God is a God of new beginnings. God forgave the Israelites. We think that God is just a forgiving God in Jesus. That is not the case. If you read through the entirety of the scriptures, you will see God is a forgiving God. He is a God of new beginnings. And Jesus Christ's ministry was just a natural outflow of the character of God all throughout the scriptures. And Brian also called us to go before God in boldness in the same way that Moses did. They were great reminders. But we're finishing the book this week, and I want to say I'm grateful that we've walked through this book. I know we've done it somewhat quickly to some of you, and others of you have been like, when are we moving on to the next series? But I'm grateful that we've walked through this whole book and really looked at the teachings of the book of Exodus, because it proves that, yes, at times we can hone in on cultural issues that the world is facing and deal with them from the perspective of the scriptures. But we can also, shy away from just being a church that's teaching pop sermons, every single week about just whatever we want to talk about. We can go through the Word of God and get in discussions and teachings that we wouldn't otherwise get into. Now, we're going to conclude our study, as I said, and it's going to be a very positive ending for the people of God. We're going to see a picture of restored obedience and God's presence taking up residence among the people. In this passage, in this section of Scripture from Exodus chapter 35 to 40, the people are going to do everything God commanded them and construct the tabernacle per the pattern that they have been given. So in Exodus chapter 35, before the verse I'm going to start reading in, verse 10. In the first couple of verses there, basically Moses, on the other side of hearing that God is going to go with them, he calls for this free will offering from among the people so they can gather all the materials that are required for the construction of the tabernacle. And it says in chapter 35, verse 10, all who are skilled among you, Moses is saying this to the people of God, are to come and make everything the Lord has commanded, the tabernacle with its tent and its covering, clasps, frames, crossbars, posts, and bases, the ark with its poles and the atonement cover and the curtain that shields it, the table with its poles and all its articles and the bread of the presence, the lampstand that is for light with its accessories, lamps and oil for the light, the altar of incense with its poles, the anointing oil and the fragrant incense, the curtain for the doorway at the entrance to the tabernacle, the altar of burnt offering with its bronze grating, its poles and all its utensils, the bronze basin with its stand, the curtains of the courtyard with its posts and bases, and the curtain for the entrance to the courtyard, the tent pegs for the tabernacle and for the courtyard, and their ropes, the woven garments worn for ministering in the sanctuary, both the sacred garments for Aaron the priest and the garments for his sons when they serve as priests. So he says, come and make all these things. And really, these are all the items that were listed out in chapters 25 through 31 in this book. And I covered that message on the tabernacle, laying out all these different items, looking at their significance. Well, now on the other side of this restored relationship with God, Moses is again commanding the people, hey, make all those things. Let's put together all the items for this structure. And then, I'm not going to read it, but chapters 36... 37, 38, 39, all the way to 40 are a repetition of chapters 25 to 31. But whereas God was saying, hey guys, I need you to build the ark. I need you to build the atonement cover. Now it says in these chapters, and the people built the ark, and the people built the atonement cover. So I'm going to spare you all the details right there. Hopefully if you're reading along in this series, you read it for yourselves. But it says in chapter 40, verse 17, and we're going to read to the end of the chapter. This is the very end of Exodus. It says, the tabernacle was set up on the first day of the first month in the second year, so they complete everything that they are required to. When Moses set up the tabernacle, he put the bases in place, erected the frames, inserted the crossbars, and set up the posts. Then he spread the tent over the tabernacle and put the covering over the tent as the Lord commanded him. He took the tablets of the covenant law and placed them in the ark, attached the poles to the ark, and put the atonement cover over it. Then he brought the ark into the tabernacle and hung the shielding curtain and shielded the ark of the covenant law as the Lord commanded him. Moses placed the table in the tent of meeting on the north side of the tabernacle outside the curtain and set out the bread on it before the Lord as the Lord commanded him. He placed the lampstand in the tent of meeting opposite the table on the south side of the tabernacle and set up the lamps before the Lord as the Lord commanded him. Moses placed the gold altar in the tent of meeting in front of the curtain and burned fragrant incense on it as the Lord commanded him. Then he put up the curtain at the entrance to the tabernacle. He set the altar of burnt offering near the entrance to the tabernacle, the tent of meeting, and offered on it burnt offerings and grain offerings as the Lord commanded him. He placed the basin between the tent of meeting and the altar and put water in it for washing. And Moses and Aaron and his sons used it to wash their hands and feet. They washed whenever they entered the tent of meeting or approached the altar, as the Lord commanded Moses. Then Moses set up the courtyard around the tabernacle and altar and put up the curtain at the entrance to the courtyard. And so Moses finished the work. Verse 34, then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Moses could not enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled on it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. In all the travels of the Israelites, whenever the cloud lifted from above the tabernacle, they would set out. But if the cloud did not lift, they did not set out until the day it lifted. So the cloud of the Lord was over the tabernacle by day, and fire was in the cloud by night in the sight of all the Israelites during all their travels. So we read this, and it seems that people, to some extent, have become a people of trust and obedience. They are finally doing everything just as God commanded them. All the items are constructed, and in Exodus chapter 40, all of the items are put into service. It's a moment of completion. Okay, it's like the moment when you hang all the pictures on the walls in your house, right? When you finally move into it. For me, it takes about 3 years to finally get the photos on the walls. Those are the last things that go up. And yes, I'm going to say that in front of my wife and just set proper expectations for what this move is going to be like when she attends the 10:30 service. But, I mean, realistically, it's so difficult to move. But when you finally move and when you finally establish, you know, that setting in the room, and you set up all the finishes, it's like, you know. It's a complete picture. There's a sense of fulfillment, right? And that's the feeling that we get here in Exodus chapter 40. As a result of them completing the work of the tabernacle, it says the glory and splendor of the Lord then fills that place. So rich was the presence of God that even Moses, who had seen the backside of God, could not enter it for himself in those moments. I mean, when we're talking about glory and splendor, there's just this sense in the Hebrew language that this is just like the wow factor of God. We can't even really put into words what's going on here, but there's just like this level of intensity to the glory that's going on here that Moses, who could see the backside of God, whose face was literally shining from his experiences with God, even he could not enter this space. And the chapter finishes with a brief description of the Israelites' travels after that description of God's presence filling the temple. They followed the pillar of God's presence in lockstep as a people. Now, if we can zoom out for a second and just take a bigger look at the bigger picture here at Exodus. You know, this is the fulfillment of so many promises that have been carried throughout the book, the realization of all the hopes and dreams that God has been expressing to the people. It's even a partial fulfillment of God's promises from the very beginning of the Bible in the book of Genesis. You see, God has gone from a personal revelation and a personal revealing of who he is to certain individuals, now to a corporate revelation of who he is to the entire nation of the Israelites. You know, in Genesis, it was like the red carpet preview where only some people had access to view who God is. You know, and it was Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then you had Moses at the outset of Exodus, who were able to go in and see and experience God for themselves. But now this is like the national release. This is like coming to a movie theater near you. Like God has displayed who he is before all the people. And this movie, this story is this biopic on the great I Am. That's what the whole book of Exodus has been up to this point. That's why this series is named I Am, because we've discovered so much about who God is. He was teaching the people who he was. You know, he's seen that he's powerful. He's powerful over all of nature. We saw that in the plagues. We saw that in the parting of the Red Sea. He's powerful over the greatest empire of that time in history, the Egyptian Empire. He was powerful to provide for the Israelites in all of their needs. As they went through the wilderness, they were fed. They were given water. They were cared for. He's furthermore proven his character as God, that he is compassionate, that he is quick to forgive wickedness, that he's a gracious God in that he's still promising his presence to these people even though they've been unfaithful. He is yet faithful. And ultimately, God has shown that what he desires most is relationship. Relationship. And even what we saw in last week's teaching, he even desires friendship. Friendship with the people of his creation. Now, to come back to our text for today, Exodus chapter 40, it's clearly an idealized portrait of the relationship between God and his people, because it displays a picture of national intimacy between the people and God that is a rarity in the context of the whole of the Old Testament. This is a picture of the good old days. All right, could you put on the screens a picture of the good old days? This is Trump's original White House. Like, this was a picture of the good old days. For some of you, it's still a nightmare. It's the axis of evil. For others of you, like, this was all of your hopes and dreams when he finally established his cabinet, right? And look at all those smiling faces of all those people. I don't know if you follow politics, but 90% of those people are now fired or on trial or something like that. Like, this was a picture of the good old days before everything, like, kind of fell apart, right? And maybe you still think it's being held together. Maybe that's an opinion there. Well, this cabinet fell apart. And it's sort of like in Exodus chapter 40, you can take that off the screens and I can try to reel it back in. Your guys' minds are going in so many different directions right now. It's sort of like, you know, in Exodus 40, it's a picture of the family smiling in this family portrait before the hard times hit. You know, maybe you can even think of a picture from your own childhood of like, oh, it's this idealized picture. Everybody's smiling, everyone's together before the hard times hit. Let's view this text through that lens as an example for us today, because it is an idealized portrait. What made it so ideal? What contributed to this scene of national intimacy that makes it so exceptional in the view of all the Old Testament? Well, number one, I think we can identify that this passage is highlighting the Israelites' obedience to the pattern that God gave to Moses regarding the construction of the tabernacle. This is a passage that is highlighting obedience. Did you guys get that sense? When I was reading Exodus chapter 40, did you not hear me say, he did it as the Lord commanded him? He did it as the Lord commanded him over and over and over again. This passage is supposed to stand in contrast to the episode of the golden calf that we discussed 2 weeks ago, where Moses was commanded by God to construct the tabernacle according to this pattern. And at the same time, the people are at the base of the mountain constructing their own system of worship to God that was apart from God himself. Now here in Exodus chapter 40, we get a picture of restored relationship as the people have repented. Okay, they said, oh, we did the wrong thing. We're worried that God isn't going to go with us. Oh, God is going to go with us? Okay, we're going to reform our actions. We're going to change our ways, and we're going to commit ourselves to the path that God has marked out for us. Now, I get it for them. I get what obedience means to them. In this passage, it means make the stuff for the tabernacle according to this pattern. But what has God marked out for us? What is the path for us? I established a few weeks ago while we were reading through all the details of the tabernacle and all the items there, I established that in the New Testament that we as believers in Jesus are referred to as a tabernacle for God's Spirit, right? And we understood that all the significance of the tabernacle in the Old Testament as developed here in the book of Exodus, all those significant characteristics, that it's a place of recreative beauty. You know, it's a place where we can go to hear God's guidance and his plans for us. It's a symbol of his intimacy and nearness to us. Now all that meaning is enfolded into our own humanity. But we don't have arks, right? We don't have atonement covers. We don't have curtains and all this sort of stuff within us, you know, that is this pattern that God is giving us to construct. But those items within the tabernacle that are laid out, they are simply the adornments. They are the ornaments of God's dwelling place. They were the elements of this tradition that was going to aid the people in relating to God in an ongoing basis. But what's the equivalent for us? You know, they're crafting all these things according to the pattern that God gave them. What are the adornments of this temple? What are the adornments of this tabernacle? The adornments of this body? What are the ornaments? What are the fixtures that we're to create? Colossians chapter 3, verse 12 says this, "As God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience." Or look at Ephesians chapter 4, verses 22 to 24. "You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness." You see, the adornments, the fixtures of this temple, of this tabernacle, your body and my body, are the love and character of Christ. And this is the conformity and obedience that Christ calls for in John chapter 15, verse 10, when he says, "You will abide in my love when you obey my commands." That obedience, it's born just like in Exodus, in light of God's grace, in light of his saving activity, in light of the revelation of who he is. God called for all these things on the other side of releasing them from Egypt. And so God has saved us from our sin and the penalty of our sin. But on the other side of that, he's calling us into this life of obedience out of the nearness of his presence that has been gifted to us in God's grace. But we shouldn't miss that this is an exacting obedience that God is calling for in your life and in my life. An exacting obedience, just like in Exodus chapters 35 to 40. If you look at it and you go through and you read all of those items, they are constructing the ark and the atonement cover down to the cubit that God gave them, right? It's an exacting obedience. They got to actually follow the pattern that God has given them. And I believe when Jesus speaks through the Gospels and he's teaching us about patience and gentleness and compassion and his love, the adornments of this temple, this body, your body, I don't think he means like, hey, these are general guidelines. You know, hey, just kind of shoot in this direction and it's all going to work out. I think it is exact patterns that God is giving us in the humanity of Jesus for what our lives are supposed to be like. They are exact instructions, patterns for our lives. You know, you may have heard the phrase, you know, shoot for the moon and you'll land among the stars. Ah, you know, isn't that a nice phrase? Shoot for the moon and you'll land among the stars. You know, and it's like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, if you don't make it to the moon, you might actually crash back into Earth's atmosphere and die a fiery death. Like, that's one option. Or if you make it to the moon, you actually hit your goal. You're not among the stars, by the way. I don't know if you know anything about astronomy, but you're actually 4.3 light years away from the closest star, Alpha Centauri A, all right? So you're not among the stars when you just shoot for the moon. And what I'm trying to say is, look, I think that what Jesus is calling for, he's calling for a heart that is seeking to dot the I's and cross the T's completely on our humanity. To do exactly what he's called for, to do exactly what he has demonstrated in his example and in his life. And we have to have a heart that yearns, that seeks Jesus' teachings in the Gospels and says, man, I want to do it exactly as you laid it out for me, Jesus. Now, is this perfectionism? I know some of you struggle with perfectionism. Is it perfectionism, what I'm talking about right here, this exacting obedience? Let me, you know, cause a few gasps in the room. Yes! Yes! Perfectionism. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, verse 48, "Be perfect. Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect." And I don't know about you, but I want to be made perfect and complete in Christ. But where it's differentiated is, you know, this isn't the perfectionism of our culture. This isn't the spirit of perfectionism that some of you struggle with, which is just filled with fear and anxiety and shame. As if at every turn, you know, if I think something wrong, if I do something wrong, if I don't do it exactly as God intends in my life, then God is going to abandon me. Then he's going to reject me. Then he doesn't love me. Then his grace isn't for me anymore. No, God has already dispersed his grace liberally on each of us. Our value is secure because of the ministry of Jesus. We're accepted, guys. God is with us. You don't have to have that fear and shame and that guilt-riddenness anymore. The spirit of perfectionism has no power over you. But now we can, from the heart, wholeheartedly pursue and grasp for fullness in Jesus Christ. We can give all our energy toward that end, toward a life of exacting obedience. And it's this sort of obedience that leads to the flourishing of our relationship with God. You know, God had said in Exodus chapter 19, verse 5, "If you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all the nations you will be my treasured possession." And Jesus says in John chapter 14, verses 23 to 24, "Anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. My Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them." It's this sort of obedience that leads to the flourishing of our relationship with God. Jesus continues, "Anyone who does not love me will not obey my teaching." You know, great relationships are born out of the expressed activity of trust and faithfulness and commitment. Isn't that true? Great relationships are born out of the expressed activity of trust and faithfulness and commitment and service. I mean, that's true of my relationship with my wife. That's certainly going to be true of my relationships with my friends. You know, we're not just friends in word. I'm not just married in word. I can have a better relationship or I can have a worse relationship based on the actual expressed activity. Is my wife faithful to me? Am I faithful to my wife? If there's unfaithfulness there, I can tell you that's going to damage the relationship, is it not? You know, and I can sort of just coast on the fact that I'm in a marriage with my wife. You know, hey, we're committed to each other. We signed an agreement. We made vows in front of people. That'd be really embarrassing if we annulled this. You know, and I can coast on that and I could just not speak to her. I could just not communicate. I could just not relate to her at all whatsoever. What's going to be the quality of that relationship? Nil. There's going to be nothing to that relationship. We may be near each other, but not in spirit, just our bodies will be close. You know, that's the same that's true of any sort of relationship in this life. Now, why do we think our relationship with God is going to be any different? Is it somehow in some different category because of the ministry of Jesus? That suddenly our expressed activity of our lives doesn't actually influence and affect the health, the vibrancy of our relationship with God. And you can coast on the fact that, oh, you know, Jesus has forgiven me of my sin. Well, that's like me saying, hey, I'm married. I'm still married. You know, I'm not going to leave her. She's not going to leave me. So we're going to do this to the end of time. What's that going to be? That's not going to be the meat. That's not going to be the significance of the relationship. And in the same way, if we coast on grace continually, we're never living into the substantive realities that God wants for us. You know, when the Israelites had hearts that sought after gods, other gods and other purposes, there was no room for God's spirit. There was no room for God's activity. God was even saying, look, why am I going to even go with you guys anymore? You don't have need for me. You don't have a purpose for me right now. But when the people aligned themselves with God, look what happened. His presence filled the tabernacle in a way that was so concentrated that even Moses couldn't come near. I think some of us are in the camp of perfectionism. You know, I've seen that a lot in the church. I think some of us are so stricken with guilt, we're feeling never enough and on the brink of rejection all the time before God. You know, I just want to speak over you. Jesus has met you in your guilt. Jesus has made a way for you to be accepted before God. He is enough in your place where you are not enough. That's the truth. But some of us have taken that advocacy of Christ, similar to the advocacy that Moses had before God, before the people of God. You know, when he said, God, don't leave the people, right? Show grace to the people. Some of us have taken that advocacy of Christ, and on the other side of God's presence promised to us, we haven't repented. We haven't reformed. We haven't gotten back to the work of building the pattern that God had given us in the first place. Here are the Israelites. They get back to the work that God had called them to. They didn't just rest in the grace of God. They lived into the relationship that God had built them for. Here at Branches, we are cultivating that sort of life in Jesus. because we want to taste the glory of God for ourselves. We don't want to coast on the grace of God and not have a relationship. We want to taste the fullness of who God is and experience the glory of the Lord. And that's not just going to be in the false religious hype that goes on in some spiritual cultures. Like, man, they had a good time before the golden calf in Exodus chapter 32. They created this calf, and they're there partying, and they're drinking, and they're engaging in revelry. They're feeling amazing about themselves, but there's nothing there. God isn't in it. No, we want to experience the true glory of the Lord that's going to be cultivated in loving and faithful hearts that become a home for His presence. You know, I think we see the exacting obedience here that makes a part of this ideal picture of Exodus chapter 40. And it involves the furnishings. It involves following all the directives and commands that God had initially given the people. But the other part of this picture here in Exodus chapter 40 that makes up this ideal picture of intimacy with God is the way that the people were following the dynamic leading of God in His presence on the way to the promised land. God in this pillar of smoke and in this pillar of fire, now concentrated in the camp of the tabernacle, led the people, and we can see they were in lockstep. Anytime the presence would stay, they would stay. Anytime the presence would go, they would go. This level of intimacy and this sort of leadership relationship that was going on here at the final stages of Exodus chapter 40, this was precisely what was at stake in the conversation between Moses and God in Exodus chapter 33. This is what he was contending for, this promise. God was postured away from the people, as I mentioned earlier. He was threatening not to go with them to the promised land due to their idolatry. God had said in Exodus chapter 33, verse 2, hey guys, I'm going to send an angel, and he's going to take you into this land because I'm going to make good on my promises, but I'm not going to go with you. And Moses was crying out, God, if you don't go with us, in Exodus chapter 33, verse 15. If you don't go with us, don't send us up from here. We don't want to go anywhere that you're not going. Because what is a people without a divine identity? Just another people. What's this structure, this tabernacle going to be without your presence? It's going to be just another fancy tent. What is the promised land going to be without the one who promised it to us? It's just going to be a bunch of dirt. You know, if I sketch, out a picture in a journal and I rip it out and I put it up on eBay, I doubt I'm going to have one person actually put up money to purchase that sketch. I'm not a good artist. That's why no one's actually looking for my artwork on eBay. But if I said Andrew Shea sketches, and I put it up on eBay, it would be worth absolutely nothing. But if you got Picasso's sketches, it doesn't matter if he just put a couple etchings on a piece of paper. If that's genuine Picasso, that's going to be worth thousands, if not millions of dollars. Why? It's not because of the product. It's not like this work of art is amazing. It's because of the person who's touched it. It's because of the person who's associated with it. That's what brings value to this object. And I've got to ask, what is life? What is life without the giver of it? The one who brings value to the work that he's produced. Let's think about Moses for a second. Moses had lived like royalty in Egypt. He'd also lived like an escaped convict out in the wilderness. At this point in his life, he had lived a good long life. He was toward the end of his life. And what did Moses want in the end? Having all this experience of life, all that life had to offer, experiencing royalty and pleasures and leisure, experiencing, this lostness of identity and this feeling of guilt and just wandering in the wilderness. He'd had all this varied experience. What did he want at the end of his life? What was the one thing that he said, I need this? It was the presence of God. After he'd surveyed his whole life, everything that he'd been about, he knew that the greatest thing he could get in life was this relationship with the Lord. That's what he was seeking. And for me, I've neither been a convict. I've not been a ruler. I've not yet lived a long life. Okay, I don't have all this experience, but I want to pull from the wisdom of Moses. I want to pull from the wisdom of what I see going on in the world, and I want to seek something higher than what most people seek. I want to seek something ultimate. I want to seek the presence of God too for myself and his leadership over my life. I mean, if you could bottle the passion in the heart and the DNA of this church, branches. Let me say that again, branches. Branches. If you could bottle the passion and the heart and the DNA, truly, if you cut us and you wanted to see what we bleed, if you could pour out that bottle that's just all the soul, you know what would pour out is some of the dialogue that God has with Moses in Exodus chapter 33, where Moses is saying, if your presence is in it, if you're not going with us, then don't send us out from here. The only way we want to do this, the only way that's significant, the only way that this is going to be meaningful is if we do this thing with you. God, we don't want to do this thing without you. And what are we doing if we aren't doing it with God? As a church, what am I doing with my own life if God isn't in it? If God isn't at the center of it? If God isn't leading me from stage to stage of my life? And I don't mean this in some really petty, you know, sacred, secular divide, like I'm only going to do religious things. Like, you know, what good is it to go to a park? I need to be in church 24/7. Or what good is it to read a novel? I need to read the Bible 24/7. That's not what I'm saying when I'm asking the question, what good is it if God isn't in it? I'm saying whether we're reading a novel or the Bible, or we're in a park, or we're at church, or we're at work, or we're a spouse, or we're a parent, or we're a friend, or coworker, or family member, if God isn't in what I'm doing in my life, stage to stage, what good is it that I'm doing it? I want to abide in him in all my comings and goings. I want to go where he leads. I want to do what he does. I want to walk where he walks. Imagine yourself for a moment like Scrooge McDuck. You know, Scrooge McDuck, I watched those cartoons when I was a kid, and you just watch the initial scene where he dives into the pool of coins, you know, the swimming pool of gold coins. That would be the end of you right there if you just jumped into a pile of gold coins. I just want to say that, you know, technically. But imagine that's you, that you could survive that fall into a massive pool of coins, and you're just diving into all this wealth. You know, you have that much wealth. You have a pool of gold coins. You have a 10,000 square foot palatial estate. You know, you got cars. Okay, I may be speaking to men right now, so, you know, I don't know what it is that you want. I don't know if it's beauty. You want the perfect body. You want this sense of perfection in yourself. Imagine you had all these things. You had all this life, and you're that person. And you're completely alone. You're completely alone in that world. What would it be worth? What would it all be worth? You know, that's the way a lot of people live their lives. They're seeking all these things, all this stuff that they imagine for themselves. And they're surrounded by bodies, but they're completely alone. I don't know about you, but in comparison, I don't need or want all this stuff that's perishing, that's going to pass away. I want the people. I want to do this thing called life with God and his leadership. You know, these other cares and concerns in the world, they influence me and my not yet perfect heart. You know, they work on me like a laser pointer with a cat. You ever seen that? You know, that's so fun. To just have a cat chase this laser pointer. Oh, it's over here. It's gone. Oh, it's over here. Oh, it's gone. Really, really a lot of fun. I don't personally enjoy cats. More of a dog person. And maybe that's why I enjoy the laser pointer trick so much. But, you know, these cares and concerns of the world, they work on me sort of like a laser pointer. You know, and sometimes even in church, it's filled with that laser pointer type activity. You know, sometimes if you want to follow the dynamic leading of God, the last place you're going to find it is in a church. Because the leadership of a church is so driven by acclaim, by seeking, you know, approval in the eyes of other people with growth. Oh, we got to grow the church. You know, all that's just a distraction. like a laser pointer. It's got no substance. You go to reach for these things in the world, and they disappear right before you. They're nothing of permanence. And yet the plans God has for us, his dynamic leading by his presence, always guides us to the things that are eternal, the things of true and lasting significance. You know, just as God was moving in Exodus chapter 40, and just as he was leading the people of God in a dynamic mission on the way to the promised land, do you understand? God is the same God by his Spirit, by his presence. He is among us. He is doing something at this point in history. He didn't just stop working. It's not like God rested after the work of Jesus. No, his work took on a whole new level. And he's still at work today, at this time in history, in this city. And he wants to lead every single one of us dynamically on a personal level. And he wants to lead us dynamically as a corporate people. And I see evidence that we are following his dynamic leading. I see it among our ministry partners on a corporate level. We've got these amazing kingdom works like Young Lives. Here's this mentorship that's going on alongside Teen Moms. Do you understand? 6-7 years ago, there was nothing like it in the city. There were teen moms that had no one to stand beside them as a mentor. They weren't being resourced. They weren't experiencing the grace and the love of God like they are today in this city. That's because people started following the dynamic leading of God as he was up to something. The same thing is true of Common Ground. You know, this Oakview community, this underserved population in our city, it's been underserved a long time, decade after decade after decade, it's been underserved. Now, God has done something uniquely at this time in history. And people labored and people were gracious. And now there's a work that's begun in that community. And every single day, there's an after-school program that is open and dozens of young people are being discipled in Jesus as a result. And it is something that was not happening otherwise. Because God is moving, God is working near us, within a proximity of a few miles. Not many of you know this, because you would have no way of knowing this, but in the last couple months, our HB lead pastor's circle that I've been a part of for the last couple years, we made a commitment that we're going to plant churches together in this city. We're not going to plant churches somewhere else. We want to plant churches in the city of Huntington Beach so we can reach more people for Jesus Christ in the city of Huntington Beach. Now, these are pastors and these are churches that are represented from all different denominations. And we said, oh, we're not just going to do this in word. We're going to put money behind it. And in just the initial ask, we've raised $50,000 a year that we've committed just from a handful of churches who are in on this, saying we're going to pool this money together to plant churches that are free and independent from any one of our denominations or perspectives. I want you guys to know this has never happened. It's never happened in the history of the city. In fact, I'm being told it's never happened in Southern California that churches from different backgrounds and denominations are coming together and really putting, you know, some resources behind working together in God's kingdom. You know, the church has been splintering for hundreds of years. And now the church is coming back together and we're going to be able to plant churches and say, man, it wasn't branches or this church or that church. It was the Church of Huntington Beach that came together to plant churches and reach people in the city. And that's happening because of the dynamic leading of God at this point in history as we follow him moment to moment in what he's doing. Guys, the same way that God is moving in this city on a corporate level, it's the same way he wants to lead you in your personal life. There's a story for you to lay hold of. There's a plan for you to be a part of. There's something that God is up to that he needs you to be a part of. If there weren't Christians listening, if there weren't people contributing, these things would just be invisible. They wouldn't be. And in the same way, there's a whole life that God has dreamed for you, for every single one of you, that maybe just isn't because you aren't following his dynamic leading in your life. But at Branches, we want to be a church that corporately and individually is raising up disciples who seek his direction, who desire his presence more than anything, who lay hold of this, you know, mist that appears for a while and vanishes, this life that we have for just a few moments before it's done. We want to lay hold of that and give ourselves to something eternal. The work that God is leading us into by his presence. You know, this idealized picture of Exodus chapter 40, it can be the picture of this church. I believe in many ways it is the picture of this church. I hope it's the picture of your life. I know God wants to lead you into it. So let's accept that invitation in prayer as we invite up the band right now. Would you pray with me? Lord God, so much of the book of Exodus is your grace, is your saving activity. It's all built on the foundation of your character and love. It was your own goodwill to reach out to the people, to promise them a land, to free them from their oppression and their slavery, to provide for them amidst their doubts, to make a covenant with them that they would be your treasured possession, and then to renew it even on the other side of their failure. And God, in all those different expressions of your grace and love, we know that those are all the more true for us in Jesus, that our foundation of our relationship with you is built on forgiveness and grace, that you freed us from sin, that you freed us from the punishment of sin, that you freed us from guilt and shame, that you've wiped our slate clean, that you've invited us to be a new creation, to do a new work in us, to put on a new self. You've given us your presence that we would be a very, you know, house for you, a tabernacle for you, where you would recreate us in the pattern that you always intended. Now, Lord, I pray on the other side of all that grace that we'd lay hold of the pattern and purpose and paths that you have for us, that we would adorn these bodies, our lives, with the compassion, with the kindness, with the gentleness, with the love of Jesus Christ, that we would seek after Jesus, that we'd grasp for Jesus and his life in our life, not so that we can prove something to ourselves or to anyone else, not so that we can be accepted and loved. Lord, we're already accepted, we're already loved, we're already forgiven, there's already grace. But Lord, help us lay hold of Christ to live in exacting obedience, because we know that's the fullness of life, because we know that's where we're going to experience your presence and your glory all the more. Lord, would this be a church where we don't just sing to you, God, in words, but our lives of worship that really genuinely look more and more like Jesus as we go through life. Lord, help us be a people who follow your divine direction. You didn't just do something in the past. You're doing something today. You're speaking to people today. You have plans and dreams for people, not just on this massive scale, but even in today. Who are we going to encounter? Who are we going to speak with? How are we going to conduct ourselves? God, you want to guide us. You want to lead us dynamically through everything that we experience. God, you want to lead this church branches. You want to give us a dynamic mission in this world at this time in history. History is not just this repeating story. It's going in a direction. We're preparing for your return, Jesus. Lord, help us lay hold of the vision you have for this church while we're here, while we have the choice. Let nothing hold us back from becoming everything that you dream for us, God. But let our eyes look to you. Let our prayer be always in our personal life and as a church. God, if your presence doesn't go with us, don't send us up from here. But where you move, God, we want to move. And when you stay, we want to stay. Let that be the prayer of our life and the prayer of this church.